Steve, thanks very much. Hi, everybody. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. Welcome to the show. A lot of topics to cover today, including the Van Dyke trial, the Cubs, what happened yesterday, what will happen tonight. But first, before anything else, 30 years ago, I had the pleasure of working with a young stand-up comic, a young actor named Bob Odenkirk. Bob joins us on the phone right now. Bob, are you still in show business?
I don't know. Day to day, you never know with show business. You really don't.
Don't give up on your dream, Bob. Stay. It's a dream. Don't give up on it.
All right, I'll hang in there.
All right, thanks.
I had the opportunity of seeing you at the Comedy Womb in Lyons.
My goodness. Boy, those were early days, and I was really roughing it in. But I was trying to figure it all out at the time and having a good time doing it. I love playing the Comedy Womb. Is it still there?
No, it is not. And Thursday nights was the open mic night where you got free pizza, so it was very exciting.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you were in the audience, or were you performing as well?
My girlfriend Carla Felicia performed there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
So I would go there and see all you guys, Jeff Garlin, all you people. And so glad things turned out well for you.
Yeah, everybody from that time has made their way and made good careers in show business. It's pretty amazing. I'm writing a memoir right now. It'll be out in about 3 years. I'm not kidding. It's going to take forever, but it's coming along, and I try to share with people the excitement and the wonderful people that I worked with in those early years. And of course, I still see Jeff Garlin all the time. We're good friends, and Lou Schneider from that time works on the Goldbergs with Jeff, and we all still see each other here and there.
Bob, even you, like when you think about yourself back in those days doing places like the Comedy Woman Lions and series of one-nighters here and there, did even you think that you would hit the pinnacle of success that you have achieved?
No way. I was going to use another word in the middle.
I got my finger on the dump button, don't worry.
No, I did not. Listen, I entered into show business skeptical. I'm a good Midwestern boy, and I was skeptical about the chances that I would have be rewarded by the world around me with gifts like the parts that I have here now. So I just went into it because I loved it. I love comedy. I love writing and being with my friends. And I gave myself till I was 30 years old. I said, if I haven't made a living at this when I'm 30, then I'll look for something else. I'll try something else.
Yeah, what would be your something else? I'm just curious.
Yeah, I have no idea. I have no backup. My degree is in broadcasting with a minor in philosophy from Southern Illinois University. So I don't know what you do with those two things. They're both... I don't know. They're not worthless. I mean, you could just go into there's options, but I don't have a strong backup plan, which is kind of a good thing because you work hard and you take risks because what else are you going to do, you know? But I did give myself a limited amount of time to try to make it because I did go into it with skepticism, and I'm very thankful for everything that has come my way. I really am. I mean, one thing is you have to just like just doing it, even if you're not getting paid much or anything. And if you like it enough to do it anyways, then that kind of is a good sign.
Bob, I always think the ultimate compliment you can pay an actor is watch him or her do a role and say, I can't imagine anyone else in that role. I have a very hard time conceptualizing anyone else playing Jimmy McGill but you.
It's weird, right? I mean, that thing came out of nowhere for me, and I didn't put a lot of stock in it. You know, it was a strange thing to be invited to do Breaking Bad, which is such a serious drama, also very funny if you look at it through the right lens. But I was surprised to be asked. I didn't audition. I showed up, and if they had told me, you know, you're not the right Bob Odenkirk, we wanted the other one, I would have said, no, I get it. I don't know who he is, but yes, you should have checked that first. But I would have gone home and not felt hurt at all. But it turns out to be kind of have played perfectly for me in so many ways.
You know, at first, seeing you on Breaking Bad, it was like, that is a weird casting. And then I grew to love you. And I was just heard telling someone yesterday, I am enjoying Better Call Saul more than Breaking Bad. Is that a bad thing to say? I love it.
You know, I hear that a lot, but I think it's just people feeling like, I think it's just coming to, first of all, you don't know what's going to happen in our show, and you've already seen Breaking Bad once or twice.
Yeah.
A lot of people have seen it two or three times, and it's definitely a show that's worthy of being watched more than once. So I think we're still fresh, and you don't know what's going to happen next, so that's exciting. We have a different tone. We're a different show. It's a little more internal and a little more emotional. And there's less violence, although that's starting to rise up in Better Call Saul. The bad guys are coming to the front of the stage. Look, you know, everybody feels differently as time goes by. I'm glad people are liking Better Call Saul a lot.
It's all good, man.
I don't think anything can beat Breaking Bad. That's right. That's right.
Bob, give us the ultimate story of somebody seeing you or recognizing you and figuring out who you are. That must happen all the time now. What's that like? And give us a strange version of that.
Well, you know, the weird thing is people recognize me from my voice. So, like, I'll be in line at the Rite Aid. I'll be talking to my wife or my daughter or son, and the person behind me will say out loud, Saul? And they haven't seen my face. They've just heard my voice. And that is a strange thing to feel like that people are close enough to you. And I think that's what the show does. Better Call Saul gets you very close to these people. And so you hear their voices almost as a family member or someone close to you. And so to have that, to be identified in that way is a surprising thing to me.
So a pivotal thing, I don't want to give anything away in case people didn't watch last night's episode. Next week's the finale, correct?
Yes, for this season, yes.
Yes.
More to come.
Yes, God, thank God. You and Kim come to a boiling point, and that was a great scene. I love her.
Good. Isn't she great? Rae Seahorn is a fantastic actress who, you know, is very well trained, unlike me. and I learn from watching her prepare and deliver every time. She's amazing. She's brought Kim to life and brought a smart, challenging, you know, strong woman to life on screen who's also likable and sympathetic. And she's just great.
You have mastered the nervous laugh of anyone I've ever seen do a nervous laugh on TV or movies or commercials. You've mastered it, Bob.
That's good.
It adds so much to the character because just at the right time, when you think you're boxed in, you pull out the nervous laugh and I go, oh, this guy can do anything.
That's great. Well, maybe it's a little bit of a tool in my toolkit.
Maybe.
You know, I think Saul is a guy who's always on his toes and looking for an angle in, and he finds them because he never quits. It's one of the things that makes him a little bit likable, although in general, he's a bad guy. He's turning into a bad guy. He started as a good guy, but he's becoming a guy who's really just in it for himself and very selfish, and it's a shame to watch him make that choice, but we'll see where he ends up because we don't know where he ends up. I know everyone talks about this show ending with Breaking Bad, but the truth is we're going to go, I think, past Breaking Bad into another version of this guy. And maybe he'll be, maybe some part of him will be good again.
Yeah, but there is some good in Jimmy McGill. And, like, I don't know, maybe it's guys I dated in high school. You want to fix them because you feel like they have a heart in there somewhere. And at some point, it's like Jimmy just needs to survive and find a way to get there.
Yeah, I agree. You can root for him. I think it's a good thing. I hope people are kind of rooting for him. But the thing is, his feelings are so hurt, and it's that thing where you want people to learn the right lessons from life. You know, you go like, and very often we don't learn the right lesson. We kind of overcorrect in the wrong direction. It's very common, I think, for everybody. I know for me, it's true. And I think he's overcorrecting in a kind of an angry way. And it's an interesting psychological journey.
It is.
There's a big event coming up Saturday, Bob, that you're a part of. It's at Anderson's Bookshop in Naperville. Like I said, it's this Saturday at 7 o'clock. It's you and Eric Idle of Monty Python fame. What's that going to be like, sitting on stage with a legend the size of Eric Idle?
I'm going to melt inside. we're going to actually do it at Pfeiffer Hall because I think it's too big for Anderson's Bookshop.
Oh.
We're doing it at Pfeiffer Hall there at North Central College at 7 p.m. But Anderson's Bookshop is sponsoring it. You know, they're the ones who are bringing the books and the staff to man it, because you, if you get a ticket, you'll get to enjoy me, a crazy Monty Python fan, worshiper of Python, interview one of my heroes of all time, Eric Idle, one of the great. They're all great in Python, but he is in my top three for sure. Maybe he's my favorite.
Mm-hmm.
Because Eric really did some of the silliest stuff and had just a delightful energy within Python. You know, Cleese played the angry guy who couldn't stand the silliness around him and suffered it. And that was very funny. Eric was a guy who brought a lot of light and upbeat silliness into the show. And so I'm going to be interviewing him about his crazy, incredible life as part of Monty Python, and then everything after it, all the rock and roll years where he hung out with George Harrison and as part of the crew at the early Saturday Night Live, and his time doing the Ruddles. It really, of all the Pythons, Eric's done the most comedy after Python, and all the way up to Spamalot, which is a, you know, big hit. So we're going to talk about his life and his book, which is hilarious and so entertaining, called Always Look on the Bright Side of Life.
Don't you think the Ruddles is the best parody of all time? I've seen it a dozen times. Every time I see it, I find something new in it.
It is. It is. I mean, I guess you have to compete with Spinal Tap a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, Spinal Tap had a kind of a wider, he kind of hit wider on rock and roll in general and a certain kind of rock and roll. But between those two, you're covering every base. Also, I would argue there's something really special about the Mr. Show sketch, The Fad 3. I don't know if you ever saw The Fad 3.
But you and David Cross?
That's a, it's a unique take on the Beatles and their fame, their early fame.
Now, how'd you get hooked up with Eric Idle? This is a pretty cushy gig you got.
Gee, I don't know how it happened. I think my publicist, you know, he was going to speak in Naperville. Naperville's a big city. I don't know if you knew that.
The biggest one, I think.
The largest in the country.
When my family moved there, it was 20,000 people. So it really exploded, and we were part of that early explosion of housing in Naperville. And so they knew I was from Naperville, and I think everybody knows I'm a ridiculous Monty Python fan, fanatic, really. And so they came to me and asked me if I would host it. And, yes. I mean, I got to talk to John Cleese about his book in San Diego last year, and any chance I'd get to hang out with a Python, I will always take.
Bob, you know what's strange? I've been lucky enough to interview three of the guys from Monty Python over the years, and none of the three seems to realize or didn't realize at the time the importance or the magnitude of what they were doing with Monty Python. I don't know how that's possible, but maybe it kept them more humble, maybe.
Yeah, well, it wasn't a hit. I mean, I saw them on stage in Aspen when they had that little reunited meeting, and they said, you know, nobody cared about the show. It really kind of just straggled along for 4 years at the BBC with very, you know, like a little pocket of hippie fans. Eric is the one who points out in his book, like, just when he noticed somewhere around the third season, they did these little short live tours in England, where he noticed the rabid nature of the fans and maybe kind of a how many were developing the size. But it was nothing until many years later. Just it took so many years for the show to slowly develop, and thanks to public TV in America and Channel 11 in Chicago that showed Python on Sunday nights at, I think, 10 p.m.
I thought it was 10:30, but yeah, right around there.
Yeah, my mom wouldn't let me stay up past 11, that's for sure. So and it had to be 10:30 at the latest.
And, you know, I watched it with my mom and sister because we only had one house, or one television in the house, and I couldn't really understand their accent at first, so I would just laugh when my mom laughed. And then I kind of got into it.
You got a cool mom.
Bob, you got
Python, huh?
Yeah, she did.
You got to get Dave Allen on the show and the two Ronnies and the kids from No Honestly, and then you got a show.
Yeah, and the goodies. How about the goodies?
Goodies, bring them on.
Yeah.
And I grew up in Brookfield and always went to Henry's Hot Dogs on Ogden Avenue in Cicero, and I love the little shout-outs that come on Better Call Saul. It's really cool.
Oh, that's great. That's great. Well, they really take care to try to study the time period and the place, you know, the characters from Cicero,
right,
which is interesting. And I don't know Cicero that well. I used to do stand-up at the Stay Up All Night Disco on Sunday nights. That's the most I was in Cicero.
And for people who don't know, that is the definition of the word hell gig, right? There's nothing worse than doing the stand-up at the stay-out lounge at midnight.
Yeah, it was 2 a.m.
2 a.m.
The show started at 2 a.m. on Sunday nights. I can't think of a better way to launder money than to have shows that start at 2 a.m. and at your club, but on Sunday, on Monday morning. It was not good, but you know, it wasn't bad because everyone was so out of it at that point that they didn't put up a fight. So you did your comedy. It was almost like doing it alone in your apartment, and yet there was this painting of really low energy drinkers that was about 20 feet in front of you, and they were barely moving.
So heckling. That's good.
It wasn't really any heckling. They just you get a little chuckle out of them. If you hit on something funny, you get through your 15 minutes and you leave and take your money. You got paid.
That's easy. Go see Bob Odenkirk. Are you kidding? It's Bob Odenkirk and it's Eric Idle Saturday, this upcoming Saturday at 7 o'clock. What a show it'll be. EricIdleAndersons.brownpapertickets.com is the best bet to get yourself some tickets. Bob, we're thrilled for your success. We're so happy for you. And next time you're in town, please come by. We'd love to see you live.
You got it. Thank you so much.
And we have Eric Idle on tomorrow. Any messages you want us to pass along?
Which side of life should I look on?
The bright side. I go with the bright side. It's Bob Odenkirk, everybody.
Thank you, Bob.
Take care, Bob.
Okay, cool. Take care, guys.
Bye. Bob Odenkirk.
I love him.
Better Call Saul. All right, we'll take a quick break and then more show. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.